and disease. However, if we turn our desires toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord, our desires become purified. We cannot kill desires. We have to purify them of different designations. If we constantly think of being a member of a particular nation, society, or family, and continuously think about them, we become very strongly entangled in the conditioned life, birth, and death. If our desires are applied to the service of the Lord, they be purified. And thus we immediately become freed from material contamination. Indriyaya Vya Krishtaya Akshit Vyayatam Manak Chaitanam Harate Budhe Stambas Toyam Ivahradat. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes weak. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness becomes almost lost, just like the water in the lake is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. Om Ajnana Timarandhasya Nanjana Salataya Chaksura Miritam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gandhanaha Sri Chaitana Mano Vishkam Stapitam Yukre Swayam Nam Tadati Swapadam Kutam. This is very basic philosophy. To understand the conditioned soul state. The activities, and Prabhupada describes this, that the in all systems, the function or the activity of the mind is neutral. The mind, Krishna describes, could be one's best or the greatest enemy. The mind is described in the central whereby it serves to deliver or to cause one to become interested. The mind is described as one of the resting places of lust, mind, intelligence, and the senses. The senses, in their uncontrolled state, are compared to horses that, in the conditioned soul, all over the place, all over from in this life, from one activity to the next activity, and in a broader pair, from one lifetime into the next lifetime, from one life form into the next life form, the senses are very, very powerful, very difficult to control. However, the controlling of the senses is the function of the mind. Just as in the analogy of the horses and the chariot, the mind is the steering mechanism. Although the horses are certainly more powerful than the steering mechanism, nonetheless, when the steering mechanism is used properly, it can cause these very powerful creatures, the horses, to go this way or that way, to go fast or slow, whatever. Directioning through that medium of the steering mechanism, and the intelligence, which is also resting place for lust, is supposed to be giving direction. So plenty of direction, in making this comparison, plenty of direction can be given by good spiritual instruction coming from the Shastra, coming from spiritual master, coming from Vaishnavas, coming from Krishna from within the heart. So much availability of instruction is there. But the mind and senses will not be brought under control unless the mind is brought under control. sentences will never be brought under control unless the mind is brought under control. And the mind is meant brought under control by good intelligence. Our good intelligence is to allow Krishna's good intelligence to affect our intelligence. In other words, Krishna is situated within the heart of every living being. This is described. And from Krishna within the heart comes remembrance, knowledge, and fruitfulness. According to the desire of a living entity, Krishna is supplying either one of these things. If the living entity wants to forget, no, opportunity is given, and that kind of intelligence is put into play. That kind of intelligence which almost completely covers the real consciousness of the soul. This is the effect of Maya. Maya is covering as the verse that I read today instead of the right verse, prepared for the wrong verse. Prabhupada was adding very nicely this point that from the spiritual point of view, actually everything is in relation to Krishna. Krishna certainly sees in that way, and one who sees through the eyes of scripture, chakshus, sees things as Krishna sees them. This is real intelligence, this is real, this is the proposition. When everything is simply aligned according to Krishna's vision and Krishna's desire, that's Vaikuntha, that's the spiritual world. That's spiritual seeing, that's spiritual intelligence, that's spiritual life, that's devotional service, it's the transcendental region. For the transcendentally situated Vaishnava, he is also seeing in that way, as Krishna sees. That doesn't mean that Vaishnava becomes Krishna. But he sees as Krishna sees. As Bhagavan sees, Bhagyavan sees. Krishna is the supreme, supremely opulent, transcendental Lord. Has great fortune as one who is associating favorably with Bhagavan out of loving devotion. As one's position becomes gradually passive to the point of understanding this fact, everything that exists is part of Krishna, whether spiritual or material, everything is emanating from Krishna. That person takes up loving devotional service to Krishna. It's one naturally as a sequence follows the other. Therefore, hearing the descriptions about Krishna from the right source, from the cyclic succession, then one will naturally come to this concluding situation of taking up devotional service, seeing things as Krishna sees. The force of, and therefore, for that person, there isn't such a thing as material. Everything is in relation to Krishna, everything has its purpose in relation to Krishna, and everything is acted upon or dealt with or related in that way. As something in relation to Krishna. So for that person, there is no material existence. There's no material consciousness. There's no material perception. There's no material action. Because all action is taken in accord with Krishna's plan, Krishna's desire, Krishna's purpose of bringing things into creation for his pleasure. So this material position that's being described here is actually simply a covering. It is nothing but a covering. That covering reflecting the reality beneath the covering. Just like the example is given, a shirt that has arms and torso, you know, the body of the shirt. Put that shirt on the floor, it's just a crumpled pile of cloth. But put it on the body and immediately there's shirt. The shake that the manufacturer or the maker makes is according to the body that's go inside or underneath that covering. or the hand in the glove. The hand glove wiggling around is there because the hand inside is moving around and has a particular shape. So the shape of things in this material world is but a covering. The description that's being given is condition of mind in which the mind is thinking, here is an object that my senses are perceiving. Let me try to enjoy it. And by, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, contemplating in that way, what happens? It becomes attached to that object. It happens every time. Every time. It's very predictable. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte pijan ganan karanam nasangosha. This, just like kara means it's the cause of our material existence. As Krishna is called sarva karana karanam, he's the cause of causes. So he sets this situation up where Lithity has the choice, and by choosing to see Krishna sees, that's Vaikuntha. And by choosing, even so this material world is a very interesting place to see how this phenomenon goes on. But the cause, on the other hand, karanam guna sangosya sadasad yonamishu, the living entity, by his thinking of himself as the enjoyer, is the cause of being dragged on from body to body, birth after birth, from one womb into the next womb, one material covering into the next material covering. And he's thinking that he's enjoying. Bhunte prakriti jan guna. This is also covering. This thinking that I'm enjoying, that's mine, is also material covering of illusion. While the living entity is thinking that he's enjoying so nice, inevitably, birth, death, and disease, and old age are there. This is part of the illusion, thinking that this is all right. We hear the complete atheist say, that's just part of life. You got to take the good with the bad. Or the position of the so-called spiritualist, the Vedavadarata, described as one who thinks, I'm just meant to enjoy things. In a more sophisticated, the purpose of religious life is so that these things, birth, death, disease, age, can be celebrated very ceremoniously. And by observing proper rituals, they become a very glorious thing. And in my, so I can enjoy these events in life very nicely, as far as they can be enjoyed, and in the future life enjoy them even more. Have much longer duration of life, much greater condition of sense gratification. In other words, one becomes attached, as it's being described. Indriya ishaya krishtaya. Akriya, being attracted by thinking within one's mind how this is very nice. But the thinking is very nice, miraculously, is there in every form of life. It's not difficult for us in this human form of life to see the advantage that's there in the human form of life to enjoy in a nicer manner. Just as we were hearing in class the other day of the position of King Indra when he had to take birth as a pig. But he was thinking how nice it is, and Lord was astonished. How nice it is with my pig and little piglets and widowing here in the mud, eating stools. If I leave, what will happen to my little piggy wife and piglets? If I went with you, Lord Brahma, if I renounce this wonderful situation, I'll be enjoying, and what about all of my one family like you? But just as it's laughable how that kind of illusion exists in relation from comparing the human form to the life form, the fear that's there and when we speak to people about the topic of reincarnation, they at least in my experience, they quite often say things like, I wouldn't mind being a bird with the freedom of flying here and there. That would just be wonderful. But look at a bird's existence. They're completely fearful all the time. Give them some food, and they are petrified. At any moment, someone is going to do some harm. And then that food is gone, and they're still on hunting for food. How much can you give them to the point where they're not, that they burn up so much energy from their hearing and mating arrangements, practically eating all the time, or looking for food all the time. Between eating, fearing, mating, sleeping, this is their existence, the sum of their existence. But it's not so wonderful in this human form of life either. Things are going in a more so-called, anyway, sophisticated manner. But these same basic activities are there. And one is very and anyone's born. The bird doesn't want to give up his body. The pig doesn't want to give up his body. The cockroach doesn't want to give up his body. Any embodiment is such that one becomes very attached. We give this explanation of why the living entity can't remember previous births, because the experience of death is so horrible and painful. We're very much afraid to give up this body. We're attached to this body. But this attachment is of our suffering also. And as we're attached, bodily concept of life, then we're also trying to enjoy. And as we're trying to enjoy, this further increases the attachment. Purusha prakritahi unke prakriti janvinan. It explains nicely transmigration. It's very specific. As long as one remains attached to the body and to the, which applies to senses, considering a happy life is one in which the senses are gratified, because that's me, so that I'm gratified with this body. One will continuously transmigrate. And as conceptions of life change, then the idea of what will be enjoyable for the sense, that also changes. And thus, forms of embodiment also change. From this form to that. This gender to that gender, this species to that species, and on and on and on and on. Theoretically, endlessly. It's an endless situation. It's a setup for repeated birth. The mind is very important, plays a very important part in all of this business, particularly in the human form of life. Because in the human form of life, there's the option to not continue this repeated birth and death activity. The wrong thing to do with the mind is to allow the mind, within the mind, to contemplate in these various sense objects. What the verse particularly describes is, when one does this, the mind becomes agitated, and as a result of the mind being agitated, it will continuously, uninterruptedly, think of these sense objects. And as the mind functions in that way, pure consciousness becomes almost completely gone. Not, it doesn't simply say covered. Gone. Within the description of the species of life, there is a description of the what life forms are those life forms where there's no opportunity for movement, there's no legs, like plants. And also hills and mountains. Hills and mountains are all there, at least while they're in certain stages of development, they're living entities within. There are mountains that living entities longer there, they've left, and therefore the growth and development of those hills and mountains is no longer there. But while the soul is present, and that gives rise the hills and mountains growing. Scientists have their explanation and the transcendentalists have their explanation. One result, one analysis is caused by the presence of the soul, just as in this human one. The transcendentalist understands that growth takes place because of the presence of the soul. In one room conversation I was recently listening to, Prabhupada was describing like this. If you take a seed and put it in the ground, because you've put that seed in the right kind of condition, then the tree will begin to grow. Whereas if you don't put the seed in that right kind of condition, it will stay for long periods of time. You put it in the right condition, it begins to grow. So simply, the demoniac, the description in the Bhagavad Gita of demoniac principles of life, is they're thinking sex life alone is the cause of existence. And therefore they worship it. And they worship sex life. But what is this thing that's going on? It's no different than the placing of the seed of a tree in the ground. When the secretions from male and female combine in the proper manner, then this makes the right kind of condition for the seed or the spirit soul present to grow and develop a body. And the human elements combining creates one condition, the dog's elements make another condition, and the soul enters, then they develop dog body or human body or whatever body. They simply create the right condition. In other words, even if scientists could duplicate those chemical compositions, what it's doing is the same thing that's already going on by nature. They're not creating life. They're making the condition right for that body to form when the soul becomes present. And depending upon the prior condition of the soul before entering into it will select it by laws of nature, it will be arranged this particular soul to that condition, this particular soul go to that condition, and corresponding develop a body according to their desires for intent, according to how we contemplate on the particular objects of sense, how we're cultivating and developing our desires for enjoyment of matter. Then we're placed in the condition where we can fulfill that. Krishna is controlling with Daivyesha Gunai Mamamaya Duratiya. He is controlling the material energies, and very difficult to overcome that condition of control. Practically impossible. Consciousness becomes practically lost, pure consciousness. If the consciousness of the soul is within the mountain or hill, very covered, even within stone. Crystal of some kind. Soul is everywhere. Where there's life symptom, we know that there's soul present. Soul can become completely lost. Consciousness of the soul, rather. So much covered. In a dormant state. So in this human form of life, the opportunity there just to completely change that altogether. The analogy that's given in the verse is like straws or seeds that grow, grass that grows along the shore of a body of water. The leaves store water, and as they drink, we drink through our mouth and plants drink their legs. Prabhupada described it. We can't imagine drinking through our legs. But nature's arrangement is like that. They drink the lake. They store all the water, and the lake dries up. So that in this analogy, the lake is compared to our... It's not that the water is gone. It's now in the reeds. But the appearance of the water is now gone. In the lake. It is practically up. So consciousness is never destroyed. As much as desire is never destroyed, desire is a natural, concomitant fact of the soul. We can't is described in the purport. When we can't stop desiring because it's of the soul. The material condition, and again referring back to the earlier description, from the transcendentalist point of view, or from God's point of view, from the Lord's point of view, there is no difference, material, spiritual. His energies are working differently according to the living entities, that's all. They're acting to cover him, or they're acting to engage him directly in the Lord's service, that's all. Acting this way or that way, as the electrician. He uses electricity as one kind of energy. But according to the desire of the person who the electrician is working for, he'll use that same electricity sometimes to make things hot, sometimes to make things cold. It's the same electricity, the same energy. So the Lord's energy works in this way also. According to the desire of the living entity, he'll serve to cover them or to engage them directly in his loving activity. In either case, they're serving him. So living entities, opportunity, just like the client of the electrician, to come before the electrician and say, my electrician, please use this energy, electrical energy, the following way. So the devotee can, for the Lord, properly inquiring, what is the Lord's desire for him to serve? How his energies, he would like to see them engaged in his service, and then act accordingly. That position. And this other position that's being described is the very pitiable thing of a living entity that's captured in the material world. In a very embarrassing condition, practically losing his spiritual intelligence and pure consciousness. When that happens, needless to say, one acts very foolishly. No matter who does, one acts foolishly. There's not a better foolishness or a worse foolishness from the transcendental point of view. In this same conversation listening to, Prabhupada was making this point about vegetarianism. He was saying that our movement is not to promote vegetarianism. That's not what we're interested in doing. So it's in one sense that's better than the other. Vegetarian is not vegetarian. But actually, there are societies that are set up simply to promote vegetarianism, but they're not on their back to Godhead by accomplishing that. Just like within the political field of making some arrangement so that government adjusts itself this way or that way. But nothing will be finally thought until the living entity understands that the Lord is the proprietor of all things, and all things therefore should be engaged in his service. Exactly the problem with this, as this verse is described, one is contemplating enjoying this thing instead of that thing. The mind is contaminated, the mind is agitated. By changing from this political situation to that political situation, one isn't going to experience happiness and peace that one wants. As the campaigning for president comes along, people will undoubtedly be asking us, do you people vote? People like to vote, things like that. If there were a transcendental candidate, certainly we would vote. Our vote is for that which will take us out of this existence. And if we were to vote, it's not that we're thinking with any expectation, that a mundane candidate is going to be able to produce what the mundane can't promises. They certainly can't produce what the transcendentalist aspires for. That's for certain. So our best answer to something like this, they're very anxious for that day when there's one who is proposing to administer according to the laws of God. We'll vote for that person in a minute. But bringing people to that understanding, that's our business. It's not an easy task at all. How to extinguish material desires. It's not an easy task individually. It's certainly not an easy task to accomplish within the nation. How to flood the whole, just reverse this whole process of the water being sucked up by the straws at the edge of the lake. Just the opposite, to inundate everything. With water everywhere. With the waters of love of God. Then pure consciousness can flourish. This process of inundating everything so that the water of God is spread everywhere is by chanting the glories of the Lord, distributing the message of the glories of the Lord in any and every way possible, by speaking it, by presenting it in recorded form, by inviting people to come and participate here at the temple so they can hear the vocation, by placing the form of in their home and chanting the holy name in their home, wherever they go, here and there. When the object of this transcendental message is presented instead of the objects of the senses, then one's consciousness becomes properly restored. So see if there's any discussion or questions. About a what? Complete atheist? I'm not sure I understand your question, but yes. We talked about this in class the other day also. Well, if you say there's no such making an absolute statement, then you can say the same thing about any condition of atheist. There isn't any atheist by that line of logic. An atheist is complete atheist is an atheist. You're saying there can't be a complete atheist because that means they would have no love for Krishna in their heart. Then by that meaning. I'm just now expanding what I just said. By that reasoning, then there isn't such a thing as any atheist, because they have love for Krishna in their heart. For the tiny atheist or the biggest, they actually have love for Krishna in their heart, so there's no atheist. When we say complete atheist, meaning they, without missing a step, they manifest the behavior that's described by Lord Krishna to Arjuna of the demoniac nature. There are persons who exhibit that. They also have love for Krishna in their heart. Just as the verse is saying, as a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness becomes almost lost. Almost. So the atheist means almost lost. Complete atheist. His love for, dormant love for Krishna is almost lost. That's the complete atheist. Right? Yes, no? You want to argue it further? Okay. Anything else? Yes? Yeah, like Kamsa, the classic example given by Rupa Goswami is very conscious, but he wasn't Krishna conscious. I mean, he was Krishna conscious, but he wasn't in the situation of bhakti, all that bhakti yoga, always manmana. He was always in Krishna. But inimically, as opposed to favorably. So that's another definition. One is always thinking of Krishna unfavorably, completely. He's Ishvara. This is one of the terms, one of the principal terms of like Purusha, Ishvara, controller. This is like. There's many Ishvaras. So he's Ishvara. Pura Prakriti Stelhi. His thinking of himself as God will very nicely make the arrangement for him to become like his worshipper, according to his desire to lose worship from that dog. But he's not Parameshwara. Parameshwara. They never what? Yes. Between the atheist and the there's not the atheist also, it's as he was saying. The atheist, by definition, by defining themselves as atheist, means they're saying, I'm not interested in God. So immediately they're also talking of God. They may not speak his name, or as they sometimes G blank D. But that's also same. Very label, atheist, meaning defined ourselves as one who doesn't accept God, is then God, so God is the topic that determines their definition. I'm not this, just like the impersonalist. That's demoniac. The atheist demon, the demon's an atheist. Prabhupada uses this terminology interchangeable in some other ways. He says in your Bible, there's the, I think it's heathen? Huh? Heathen? One who didn't accept God. Heathen. Heathen, atheist, demon. The evangelists on TV. Demons. Maybe you can explain for the benefit of others why you think that they're demons. It's cheating. Should be rejected. Leave that aside, but that's the same as that you brought up earlier, leaving that in the core of their heart consideration aside, as far as their external dealings. from the transcendental point of view, they're in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, they're thinking they're the Veda Vaidarbhika Guru. They don't have the right kind of intelligence because they think that the purpose of their religion is all the things that the evangelist is promising to the followers. They aren't giving them a clue of eternal life with the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha Loka. They're not giving them a clue of that because their understanding is something else is what is promised by God. And that's what they're giving. Well, that's what they're presenting. But God is the center. It's different than the atheist, because there is no God, I am God. The position Hamsa or Hiranyakashipu is that they wanted themselves to be in a position that to occupy the post of God, supreme controller over everyone. So these evangelists are simply misguided. And according to Bhagavad Gita and according to Ishupanishad, very much condemned. But they're proposing the supremacy of God. That's their basic premise. Well, according, I don't know if this is exactly what you want to hear, but according to what Asurya Namate Loka Antyatama Savita, those who are simply hedonistic, their destination is the lowest planets. And worse still are those who are presenting so-called knowledge, especially religious knowledge. So, whatever label you want to give these evangelists, TV evangelists, know where they're going. Whatever label you want to give them, you know where they're going. It's possible by dint of association with a very powerful transcendentalist, they could change.